Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, June 4th. Midland Black Lives Matter protest ends in prayer with police. One demonstrator was arrested for blocking roadway. By Caitlin Randall. Black Lives Matter protesters ended a demonstration in Midland on Tuesday night by joining in prayer with police officers at the scene shortly after one protester was arrested. The prayer was planned beforehand, according to the event's organizer, Latricia Smith. She said a pastor in attendance had offered to say a prayer for George Floyd, who died last week after a Minneapolis police officer kneeled on his neck, and for the country amid the ongoing unrest following Floyd's death. "I feel like there's power in prayer," Smith said. "It's well needed right now for this country." It was unclear if organizers had asked the Midland police officers to join them or if the officers did so after seeing the demonstrators form a circle. Several protesters and officers hugged after they prayed together. The scene was similar to others that have unfolded at demonstrations across the country, including in Houston, Denver, and Atlanta, where officers walked with protesters or kneeled with them. The protester who was arrested, Ruby Carrasco, was charged with obstructing a highway, according to her arrest affidavit. The affidavit states she stood in the middle of the roadway on Big Spring Street, holding a sign, and was told to move several times. In an interview, Carrasco said she was crossing the street with several other protesters when an officer grabbed her suddenly. "I was walking backwards, still holding my sign up with both my hands. I honestly don't know what possessed the officer to push me and then yank me, because I was already almost to the curb by the time he did that," she said. The MRT had three reporters on scene at the time of the incident. They saw Carrasco and at least two other demonstrators stand briefly in the middle turn lane holding signs before continuing across the street. Protesters had been standing in the same spot for about 30 minutes earlier that night before officers told them to move. When asked why Carrasco was arrested and not the other protesters who were also crossing the street, an officer at the scene said, "We've only got so many hands." Carrasco said she believed she was singled out because she made eye contact with the arresting officer. She said they did not speak to each other before she was detained and earlier in the evening. "I feel like I was in a car accident," Carrasco said, as she described swelling and bruises on her arms and wrists and pain in her shoulder she attributed to the officer pulling her arm. She said she was considering seeing a doctor to evaluate her shoulder. Carrasco said her initial court date for the misdemeanor charge is scheduled for October, and she planned to plead not guilty. There was tension between demonstrators and police after her arrest, as more officers arrived at the scene, and some carried rifles, but both parties seemed to relax before the protesters began praying. Protesters dispersed at about 10:30 p.m. Protest has happy ending with prayer and embraces. Commentary by Stuart Doreen. Sometimes it is possible to have a happy ending. That was the case when I saw the picture from our coverage of Tuesday night's protest downtown. Late into the evening, after many Midlanders had gone to sleep, protesters and police gathered in a circle to pray. Then some exchanged hugs and called it a night. Think about this for a moment. All around the nation, we have seen protests evolve into something else: violence, destruction, and division. However, here in Midland, hours of protest culminated in prayer. As a Midlander, I couldn't be prouder. I am not saying that our community can put a bow on the conversations and events of the past couple of weeks. But maybe today our starting point is different. Maybe today our approach can be less contentious. Maybe today we speak less and listen more, all of us, on all sides. I had the opportunity Wednesday to speak with Midland Police Department Sergeant Jorvarsi Geo Mitchell for a profile that is scheduled to appear this weekend. He talked about the prayer and embraces as examples of the police department he knows and the love police officers have for the community. He said police officers want to make things right, and he hopes both sides can have the mentality to understand the other side better. Last night was the perfect deal, Geo said. Maybe protesters see the police participation in prayer and embrace as a welcome sign that they were heard. A few of our readers seem to agree with Geo about what they saw in J.C. Lewis' pictures of togetherness. As of 1 p.m. Wednesday, the prayer posts on the Reporter Telegram's Facebook page have been liked more than 1,750 times and shared about 865. The Reporter Telegram doesn't see social media engagement like that all the time, so thank you for voicing your opinion. I don't know what's going to happen today or tomorrow. There possibly could be another rally that follows a different script. But at this point, that would be the exception, not the rule, for how Midlanders have acted. The actions of protesters and police so far show Midland in a different light. That is something we can be proud of, and that is something we can build on as city, police department, and community leaders continue the conversation about what happens next. I look forward to those conversations more today than I did the day before. I see that people can spend hours voicing their opinions, but at the end of the day, stand next to and embrace the person they are protesting against and put the community ahead of all. That teaches the rest of us an important lesson. They say a picture is worth a thousand words. I saw a few that are worth more than that. City. Coronavirus cases rise 12 this week. Total is 141. The number of coronavirus cases confirmed this week will be the most in 3 weeks, according to the Midland Health Department. The health department reported 4 coronavirus cases to raise the total this week inside Midland County to 12, 3 Monday, 5 Tuesday, and 4 Wednesday. The overall cases count is now at 141. MRT records show 19 cases from May 10th through the 16th. The most reported in 1 week was 29 from April 19th through the 25th. The 4 on Wednesday were a female in her 60s who is currently an inpatient at Midland Health. The source of exposure for the woman is travel within the United States. A male in his 50s currently self-isolating at home. A male child, 0 to 9, currently self-isolating at home. And a male in his 30s currently self-isolating at home. The source of exposure for the 3 males was contact to a known case. Those testing positive over the last 3 days include 3 people in their 30s, 3 between 0 to 9 years of age, and 2 adolescents between 10 and 19. The Midland Health Department also reported that 73 of the 141 confirmed cases have recovered. 3 have completed isolation. 21 are at home isolating, 31 are at the hospital, a nursing home or rehab facility, and 13 have died. The health department will continue to monitor the individuals in accordance with the CDC. Ector has 8 new cases. Nursing home staffer tests positive by J.C. Lewis. A staff member at Deering Nursing and Rehabilitation tested positive for coronavirus. The state-mandated testing occurred at Deering on May 19th, and results came back May 21st. Results showed 100% negative results from residents and staff. The nursing home is working with local health authorities to determine a retesting plan to investigate the full spread of the outbreak. In the meantime, residents are having their temperature checked 3 times a day and have been provided information on how to self-monitor, then report symptoms to a nursing team member. Staff members are screened upon arrival for their shift. Ector County reported 8 more cases of coronavirus Wednesday, bringing the total to 175. Ector County reported 13 probable cases at this time. ECHD reported that 128 people have recovered. There have been 2,555 tests taken, with 2,270 negative results and 110 pending results. ECHD has contacted 1,890 people during contact tracing. West Texas VA Clinic resumes in-person appointments. The West Texas VA healthcare system will begin scheduling face-to-face healthcare appointments beginning Monday. Phase one of a 3-part plan begins with primary care teams and specialty services booking up to 25% of a clinic's capacity. This includes primary care, mental health, dental, ophthalmology, physical therapy, occupational therapy, prosthetics, dietary, audiology, radiology, lab, and cardiopulmonary. In line with federal, state, and local guidance, VA clinics will prioritize in-person appointments of a procedural nature and associated outpatient services when those services cannot be conducted through telehealth options. This plan will continue in 2-week increments, increasing the number of in-person appointments by 25% for each 2-week period until full capacity is achieved. Precautions include reduced entry points, staggered appointment times, physical distancing, the wearing of masks, and frequent disinfecting. In addition, veterans may be asked to wait in their vehicles until called by clinic staff. For more information, call 800-472-1365 or email WTXVAPublicAffairs@va.gov. Cotton Patch Cafe, which has been closed during the pandemic, reopened Wednesday. The restaurant at 2320 West Loop 250 will be open for normal business hours through Sunday, will be closed Monday and Tuesday, and will remain open 7 days a week beginning June 10th. Cotton Patch offers delivery through DoorDash, Uber Eats, and Favor, as well as curbside delivery. For more information, call 618-0070 or visit cottonpatch.com. Clinics offer coronavirus tests. First Med of Midland, 201-1403, www.midlandurgentcareclinics.com. Cash price for virtual visit for COVID-19, $75. Cash price for nasal swab PCR test, $70. Cash price for COVID-19 antibody test, $50. Cash price for office visit, $120 to $150. Midland Memorial Hospital, 68 Nurse. MidlandHealth.org. Mobile testing center at West Campus for COVID-19 nasal swab PCR. Must call for appointment. Antibody testing at West Campus or Main Campus, direct access, 68 Nurse, or 221-1111. Cash price for antibody test, $50. Signature Care, 699-2601. ercare24.com/Midland. Cash price for COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for antibody test, visit plus test, $175. cash price for both COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR, and antibody, $300. If patients are insured, will need to pay copay. Rest will be billed to insurance. Copay waived for first responders.
Hello, this is April, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, June 4, 2020. Cat comforters. Girl Scout Troop 34011 in Greenwood donated 30 homemade blankets to the Midland Animal Shelter for the cats kept there. In addition, the girls are making scratch posts that also will be donated to the shelter. Delivering the blankets on Tuesday were Scout McKenna De La Rosa, back left, Julie LaChance, leader, back right, Jolene LaChance, front row from left, and Scouts Lindsay White and Emery LaChance. Other Scouts who helped make the blankets were Lacey Pruitt, Harley D'Amico, Elise Cobb, and Anna Hernandez. West Texas VA Clinic resumes in-person appointments. The West Texas VA healthcare system will begin scheduling face-to-face healthcare appointments beginning Monday. Phase one of a three-part plan begins with primary care teams and specialty services booking up to 25% of a clinic's capacity. This includes primary care, mental health, dental, ophthalmology, physical therapy, occupational therapy, prosthetics, dietary, audiology, radiology, lab, and cardiopulmonary. In line with federal, state, and local guidance, VA clinics will prioritize in-person appointments of a procedural nature and associated outpatient services when those services cannot be conducted through telehealth options. This plan will continue in two-week increments, increasing the number of in-person appointments by 25% for each two-week period until full capacity is achieved. Precautions include reduced entry points, staggered appointment times, physical distancing, the wearing of masks, and frequent disinfecting. In addition, veterans may be asked to wait in their vehicles until called by clinic staff. For more information, call 800-472-1365 or email wtxvapublicaffairs@va.gov. Cotton Patch reopens. Cotton Patch Cafe, which has been closed during the pandemic, reopened Wednesday. The restaurant at 2320 West Loop 250 North will be open for normal business hours through Sunday, will be closed Monday and Tuesday, and will remain open 7 days a week beginning June 10, according to the chain's marketing firm. Cotton Patch offers delivery through DoorDash, Uber Eats, and Favor, as well as curbside delivery. For more information, call 618-0070 or visit cottonpatch.com. Clinics offer coronavirus tests. First Med of Midland, 201-1403, www.midlandurgentcareclinics.com. Cash price for virtual visit for COVID-19, $75. Cash price for nasal swab PCR test, $70. Cash price for COVID-19 antibody test, $50. Cash price for office visit, $120 through $150. Midland Memorial Hospital, 68 nurse, midlandhealth.org. Mobile testing center at West Campus for COVID-19 nasal swab PCR. Must call for appointment. Antibody testing at West Campus or Main Campus Direct Access, 68 nurse or 221-1111. Cash price for antibody testing, $50. Signature Care, 699-2601. ercare24.com/Midland. Cash price for COVID-19 nasal swab PCR test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for antibody test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for both COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR, and antibody, $300. If patients are insured, will need to pay copay. Rest will be billed to insurance. Copay waived for first responders. Source, Midland Health. Today in history. Today's Thursday, June 4, the 156th day of 2020. There are 210 days left in the year. Today's highlight. On June 4, 1998, a federal judge sentenced Terry Nichols to life in prison for his role in the 1995 bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City. On this date, in 1939, the German ocean liner MS St. Louis, carrying more than 900 Jewish refugees from Germany, was turned away from the Florida coast by U.S. officials. In 1942, the World War II Battle of Midway began, resulting in a decisive American victory against Japan and marking the turning point of the war in the Pacific. In 1972, a jury in San Jose, California, acquitted radical activist Angela Davis of murder and kidnapping for her alleged connection to a deadly courthouse shootout in Marin County in 1970.
Obituaries and death notices from the MRT for Thursday, June 4th. Frank C. Wild, born August 15, 1933, in the Bronx, New York, passed away May 31st at the age of 86 from a brief illness. He is survived by his two sisters, Eleanor and Dolores, his second wife of 20 years, Pauline Garcia Wild. Sons Frank G. Wild of Midland, Michael K. Wild of San Antonio, daughters Pamela G. Daupert of Odessa, and Karen M. Wild of Greenville, South Carolina. Stepson Bobby J. Arangua and stepdaughter Deborah Arangua. Numerous grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and numerous nieces and nephews. The memorial service will be held Friday, June 25th at 10 a.m. at the American Heritage Funeral Home. Freddie Flores, 69, of Midland, passed away June 1st in Midland. Freddie was born to Pilar Hall and Enrique Flores, February 14, 1951, in Midland. He is survived by his mother, wife Guadalupe Flores, son Freddie Flores, daughter Magda Flores, son-in-law Jorge Machuca, son Jaime Flores, daughter-in-law Laura Ann Jacobo, three grandsons, two granddaughters, sister Socorro Terrazas, sister Linda Leal, brother Pete Flores, sister Elva Perry, sister Alma Montez. He is preceded in death by his father, brother Enrique Flores Jr., daughter Diana Flores. The viewing will be Thursday, June 4th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel. The rosary will also be on June 4th at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Chapel. Funeral Mass will be Friday, June 5th at 10 a.m. at San Miguel Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. There will be a meal provided for the family following the burial services at Legends Enterprises, 503 West Florida, Midland. Flowers and plants may be sent to Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel at 405 North Terrell, Midland. Heliodoro Mata Castellija, 82, of Midland, passed away on Monday, June 1st. There will be a come-and-go viewing on Thursday, June 4th. The family will welcome family and friends from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. A funeral service will be held on Friday, June 5th at 10 a.m., with Pastor Ben Chavez officiating at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel, and burial will follow at Rest Haven Cemetery. He was born on November 10, 1937, to Juan Pardo Castelleja and Antonio Mata Castelleja in Matamoros, Tamaulipas, Mexico. Heliodoro is survived by his wife, Maria Hermenegilda Hilda Castelleja of Midland, his only daughter, Juanita Castelleja, and her husband, Stephen Reyes. Two grandsons, one granddaughter. Oldest sister, Ata Mendez of Brownsville. Oldest brother, Juan and wife, Eva Castelleja of Brownsville. And youngest brother, Adalberto Castelleja of Brownsville. He was preceded in death by his parents, Brother Chano Castelliha, Sisters Tina Castelliha and Angela Jella Castelliha, all of Brownsville. Family requests that in lieu of flowers you make a donation to the local Alzheimer's Association, 4400 North Big Spring Street, Suite C32, Midland, Texas, 79705. The family requests you use a mask if you plan on giving your condolences to the family in person. The family understands that during this difficult time, you may not be able to join them and hope to be able to have a celebration for Heliodoro at a later time. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch, Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Kenneth Leon Buchanan, 77, passed away on Wednesday, June 3rd. The family will receive friends from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday, June 4th, at Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home. A graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, June 5th, at Evergreen Cemetery in Stanton, with Bob Hiley officiating. Kenneth was born on November 20, 1942, in La Mesa, to Herman and Leela Stevens Buchanan. He is survived by his wife, Glee Buchanan, of 55 years, two children, Chris Buchanan and wife, Carlene, of Stanton, Cheryl Spinks and husband, Tracy, of Stanton, five grandchildren, three great-granddaughters. He is preceded in death by his parents, Herman and Leela Buchanan. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Christmas in Action, P.O. Box 3744, Midland, Texas 79702, or Buckner's Baptist Children's Home. Charlie David Gregg, 64, of Gardendale, passed away Saturday, May 30th. Mass will be celebrated on Friday, June 6th at 3 p.m., at St. Elizabeth Ann Seton Catholic Church in Odessa. Please visit frankwwilson.com to leave online condolences. Noah Oro Stephen Gonzalez, 23, of Midland, passed away Monday, July 1st. Viewing will be Sunday, June 7th from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., with evening services starting at 7 p.m., at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A funeral mass is set for Monday, June 8th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. He is survived by his mother, Mary Lujan, Father Steve Gonzalez, sisters Steve Anna G., Connie D., Audrey B., Elohi G., six nephews, four nieces, numerous aunts, uncles, and cousins.
Hello. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, June 4th, 2020. Front page. Very top of the page, there's a photo of four people carrying a big banner in defense of Black Lives. March, rally, vote. Then there's another photo. A mother and her baby, says 8-month-old Kathalea Mathis, is carried by Holly Edwards Wednesday evening during the In Defense of Black Lives protest. Photos by Ben Powell, Odessa American. Now the article that goes with those two photos, Black Lives Matter, Odessa March Draws Several Hundred People, by Tony Venegas, T-V-E-N-E-G-A-S at OAOA.com. Protesters braved the heat on Wednesday to participate in the A Defense of Black Lives March in downtown Odessa in support of Black Lives Matter. Several hundred people marched peacefully from City Hall on 8th Street to the Odessa Police Department at 3rd and Grant. Elvenisha Johnson, 30, of Odessa, marched with her 7-year-old daughter, Alicia, and said that she wanted to see her children grow up in a safer environment. "I'm tired of it, and I just want it to change," Johnson said, I have kids that I'm raising, and they want to live equal like everyone else and not be scared of the police whenever they come down the street. The march is the second this week with a Sunday downtown event that lasted several hours that was also peaceful. Gavin Norris, an attorney in Odessa and one of the organizers for the march Wednesday, took a moment to recognize Emily LaShaw. LaShaw was one of the organizers for the March for Change Sunday. Prior to the march, Norris said that he wanted the community to have another avenue to express themselves freely and peacefully. "We want people to have their voices heard in a constructive and a positive way," said Norris. "We know people are hurting, they're in pain, they're mad, they're upset about the things that are happening in the country, and they're upset that they continue to happen at a disproportionate rate to Black people. We want people to voice their anger and then allow those who have that support to support their brothers and sisters in the community." Marchers carried signs that included "Black Lives Matter," "No Justice, No Peace," and "Racism is a Pandemic." As part of the Black Lives Matter movement, in response to the death of Houston native George Floyd, who died in Minneapolis last week while being restrained by a police officer who is now charged with murder. The article continues on page 3. There's another photo, Corporal E.J. Stewart with the Odessa Police Department, and another protester support a protester who lost consciousness while he calls for medics over the radio Wednesday night during the In Defense of Black Lives protest at Odessa's City Hall. The woman eventually regained consciousness when a nurse from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center cooled her off with some cold water that was donated for the protest. Ben Powell, Odessa American. The article continues. As marchers arrived at the OPD, speakers talked about conducting themselves peacefully if they were to run into anti-marchers and also staying together with a unified message. A city representative, along with OPD Chief Michael Gerke, were among the group of speakers scheduled to speak at OPD. The protesters arrived at OPD headquarters around 7 p.m. Prior to that, the crowd heard words from Norris, Reverend Karen Carlson of Mackey Chapel United Methodist Church, and Joanne Davenport Littleton, among others. Several religious leaders and politicians, including State Representative Brooks Landgraf, were also in attendance. The crowd was uplifted by Carlson's words to treat others with kindness and compassion. "May our eyes look at each other's eyes to know their stories," Carlson said, "and to get to know your neighbor as we walk and as we step," Carlson continued. "Today we are going to move, and as we move, it's about peace." The message was also about to let people have their voices heard. Deputy voter registrars were located at City Hall to help register to vote. Littleton touched on that subject in her remarks to the crowd. "The way to make change is to make sure that you are a registered voter, then become an informed voter," she said. "Make sure that the people that you elect represent all the people." Odessa police were stationed along the route on 8th Street and down Grant Avenue, but no incidents occurred during the initial march. Since Friday, many major cities around the country, including Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, and Dallas, and Austin, have dealt with protests that erupted into full-blown riots. In Houston on Tuesday night, about 60,000 people gathered to march for Floyd. In Texas, Tuesday night was quieter, and for the most part, early curfews were observed, and looting and vandalism was not as prevalent as in previous nights. Texas Governor Greg Abbott on Tuesday declared a state of disaster following a weekend of violent riots. every Texan and every American has the right to protest, and I encourage all Texans to exercise their First Amendment rights, Abbott said in a statement. However, violence against others and the destruction of property is unacceptable and counterproductive. ECISD seeks feedback by Ruth Campbell, RCAMPBELL at OAOA.com. Ector County ISD is looking at starting the year early and tacking on more optional instruction time during the summer to help combat summer and the projected COVID-19 slide. Surveys also are going out to students about remote learning and a social-emotional survey, and a separate survey is calling for feedback on a proposed calendar. The calendar survey has been sent to ECISD staff, but the survey also will be emailed to parents. The remote learning social-emotional survey was sent out near the end of school, but it will be resent, Public Information Officer Mike Adkins said. ECISD is especially looking for feedback from students in grades 3 through 12 on remote learning, but parents will be able to look through it as well. It asks students about the availability of computers and other devices at home, adult support for their learning, their mental and physical well-being during the school closure, and other barriers they faced in learning from home, a news release said. The survey is being sent by Panorama, an ECISD partner, via email. The form itself is being emailed and some paper copies will be provided. The ECISD Police Department and Community Outreach will provide paper copies to those who may not have reliable internet access or email, Adkins said. Adkins said the One Question Calendar Survey will be on the ECISD website, posted to Facebook, and a link put on Twitter. He said later Tuesday that the calendar survey had already received swift reaction, everything from liking it to hating it. Superintendent Scott Murray said Tuesday that starting August 12th is the only option ECISD is looking at currently. It won't change teacher contracts. Those will still be 187 days, he said. It does several things for us, Murray said. It gives us more time with students. First of all, we're adding 11 student days to the calendar, so we're going from 169, what they had this year, to 180 school days next year. We've missed, obviously, a lot of time here in the 1920 school year, because of COVID-19, and we need more time with our kids, and this calendar allows us to have more time with students. It also allows flexibility, so some virtual days along with bad weather COVID-19 days have been built in. So if we do miss school days next year due to COVID-19 or for any other reason, we have extra days built in that we can use to substitute, Murray said. We also have the element of time because we're adding 11 days to the calendar. Again, if we missed some days, we may not have to make up some of those days because of the time that we've built into the calendar. He added that just because students may miss a day of school physically next year, it doesn't mean they will miss a day from an attendance perspective. This year, of course, we were closed physically for 2.5 months, but we were able to continue the learning process. We fully anticipate those opportunities next year. We are building into the calendar, or really building into our own thinking, the probable reality that we may be closed to multiple days or weeks next year for students, and we won't be able to teach those students virtually, so we will equip our students as well as our teachers to be able to literally finish school on a Friday and then start school on a Monday virtually if we have to do that, Murray said. Something that House Bill 3 passed in the last legislative session gives districts the option to add an extra 30 days to the calendar for elementary students in pre-kindergarten through fifth grade. We are adding those additional 30 days to our calendar next summer. Those are optional days for students, and of course, optional days for staff members. We would hope that most, if not all, of our elementary students would want to take advantage of that opportunity, Murray said. That would give ECISD 210 days total with its elementary students. Murray said he anticipates receiving results from the calendar survey either by the end of this week or early next week. He added that some of those preliminary findings will be shared with the ECISD Board of Trustees during their next meeting Tuesday. I anticipate the community being very positive about the fact that we want to spend more time with their children. I've listened to parents especially. They recognize that the 2.5 months of remote learning has not been an optimal experience for their kids, no matter what their situation has been, so they will appreciate the opportunity to return to an environment in which their kids have direct access to quality teachers. We're glad to be able to provide that for them, but I think most families understand the need to extend the amount of time that we spend with students next year, Murray said. While remote learning has given parents more respect for teachers, Murray said remote learning has given teachers a better idea of how students in the district live. On the remote learning survey, Murray said he anticipates that some students had a healthy experience and a small segment would prefer that learning environment all the time. I'm certain that we'll receive some of that feedback, but I think the majority of the feedback is going to be kids miss interacting with their peers. They miss interacting with their teachers. They miss some of the routines that are found in school, and they miss the social-emotional experiences, like prom, recognition events, and graduation, he said. Assistant Superintendent of Student and School Support, Alicia Siverson, said she is organizing a student and family support committee. Currently, the committee has a cross-section of district personnel, but she wants to add parents at the elementary, middle, and high school levels. When it's appropriate, she hopes to invite students to take part. I'm hopeful that committee will be able to use some of that information to drive the start of school coming up. The responses will be very important to the team, Siverson said. There also is an instructional planning piece. On broadband, Murray said ECISD received a donation to allow students and families that don't have access to broadband to get it for 14 months through June 30th, 2021. The aim is to find a permanent broadband solution for every child in ECISD. We'll be coming out with a report this summer that we'll call it a landscape report. We have a group of folks that have done a good analysis of each of our families and the level of access that we have within our system, and then working with our city and county in identifying real solutions that we can put in place as a community, not only for the students of ECISD, but really for families in our county that do not have access to broadband, Murray said. Results of that report will be issued this summer. On a separate item, Murray said he is ramping up communications with the public again through media calls on Wednesday and Facebook Live sessions. The next Facebook Live discussion is set for 7 p.m. Thursday. More information. The calendar proposed will address student needs in these ways. The number of instructional days will increase from 169 to 180. Teacher work days will remain unchanged at 187 contract days. The 11 days are professional development days converted to instructional days. The students' school year will start 3 days earlier on August 12th. The virtual instruction days are at-home learning days for all students. The bad weather COVID days are for anticipated times when a school or all schools may be closed due to the virus's impact on our students, staff, community. These are not makeup days for this spring. An extended year schedule for June and July 2021 is an optional time and can be used to target our students who need the most support. The calendar survey will remain open through the end of the day on Friday. Westlake Salvation Army Kickoff Annual Fan Drive by Sam Waller, S-W-A-L-L-E-R at OAOA.com. As temperatures warm up with the onset of summer, the need for ways to beat the heat become more crucial. For the 14th consecutive year, Westlake Ace Hardware is partnering with the Salvation Army on a fan drive running through June 21st to provide relief for those in need. During the drive, customers at all Westlake Ace Hardware stores are asked to round up the total of their purchases. Contributions may also be made online at tinyurl.com/Y7PTC2WL. This is something that ACE and the Salvation Army have teamed up on over the years, and it truly has been beneficial, said Captain Juan Gomez, commanding officer of the Salvation Army of Odessa. One thing my wife and I noticed in our first summer here was these fans are a huge need, but they're also in big demand. We have a large number of the people who come through our doors that are elderly. We did have some single parents or regular households that were lacking in funds, and we're unable to provide the fans, and were unable to provide the fans themselves. Garcia noted that public health concerns in the face of the coronavirus pandemic add to the urgency. We even had some people show up with a doctor's note that said they needed some sort of an AC or ventilation in their home for lack of an HVAC, he said. We, of course, told them that that was not a requirement, but the moment we received those fans, they started to make their way out our doors very quickly. When the heat outside gets to 110, as it often does in Odessa, you have that internal heat as well. A lot of the houses around here are made of brick. You have some adobe, some cement houses or construction in our homes. That adds to the amount of heat that is retained within our homes. Daphne Legarda, General Manager of the Westlake Ace Hardware Store at 4652 East University Boulevard, said all proceeds raised locally will stay in the community. At the end of the fan drive, we tally up all donations, and we give those fans to the Salvation Army at cost, Legarda said. One of the reasons why we do this is during the peak of the summer, when people need them the most. We're definitely hoping we are able to raise more money this year than last year. We donated almost $2,000, which is equal to almost 130 fans. The total contribution was even more, Gomez said. In addition to the 130 fans from them, they were able to give us some other fans later on as well, he said. We went through those fans so quickly. They're just a fantastic partner, and I think they understand the need, especially out here in West Texas, where the sun can get pretty daunting. A fan is sometimes not seen as a necessity. It's more of a luxury, somebody might say, and they can't afford the luxuries right now because they're paying two times the amount for toilet paper than they were 6 months ago, or bottled water, or disinfectant, or whatever. Westlake Ace Hardware, based in Kansas City, Missouri, has 139 stores nationwide, including Odessa, Midland, and San Angelo. Last year's fan drive raised more than $78,000, allowing for 5,700 fans to be donated to the Salvation Army. The company is kicking off this year's drive by contributing the first 625 fans. LaGuardia, who has been involved in the fan drive the past 4 years, said community involvement is what makes the project such a success. One thing is just the community, especially all the customers that we have and see on a daily basis, she said. They love the fan drive. We have other events, like the Children's Miracle Network event, but when it comes to the fan drive, our community, just year-round, love to donate. They know how it is with this West Texas weather and the heat. We have companies say they want to donate 20 fans or 50 fans. I know seeing that in these past years, seeing the community come together and join us throughout Westlake and seeing what they donate. It's nice seeing the community here in Odessa do that. Donate online, TINYURL.com/Y7PTC2WL. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases 175. Ector County negative 2,270 out of 2,555 tested, with 110 pending, 5 deaths. Midland County, 137 confirmed, 13 deaths. Texas, 68,271 confirmed, with 1,150,868 tested. Total Texas deaths, 1,734. U.S. cases, 1,827,425 total confirmed, and 106,202 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Quick hits. Community survey. The City of Odessa Community Development Department receives 2 grants annually from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, HUD, Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, and Home Investment Partnership Program, HOME. In an effort to prepare the 5-year 2020 through 2024 consolidated plan and the 1-year 2020 action plan, the 2020 through 2024 consolidated plan survey is now available directly through the City of Odessa's home website through Friday. The Community Development Department is requesting citizen input on 2 separate topics for 2 vital purposes. To identify the needs of our community and develop 5-year goals and strategies to address these needs. Complete an analysis of impediments to fair housing within the community. It is important that citizens and organizations participate in this survey process to assist the City of Odessa in identifying the needs within the community. Please let us know where these funds should be allocated. If you feel there are additional needs for low and moderate income residents that are not referenced to, please list them in the comments box online at the end of the survey. English version of the survey, https://www.surveymonkey.com/r/9sp37dr. Spanish version of the survey, https://www.surveymonkey.com/r/1span. From staff reports. Closing prices. Posted, $33.75. Futures, $37.29. Natural gas, $1.821. Benchmark U.S. rose 48 cents to $37.29 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Summer mummers to postpone annual event. OA News at OAOA.com. The Board of Summer Mummers announced that it will postpone plans for its annual event at the Yucca Theater. Summer Mummers' 2020 show, Bootlegging Booberie in the Basin, was slated to open July 10th and to run through September 12th. Due to current CDC limitations in regard to COVID-19 and with no reopening measures as of yet for live performances issued by the state of Texas, the board decided that it was in the best interest not to hold the event this year and risk possible infections in the community, a news release said. It is with profound sadness that the Board of Summer Mummers must postpone plans for our annual event at the Yucca Theater. We had hoped to entertain you this summer, but the governor has not released reopening guidelines for live performances, and it is unforeseen when he will do so and or at what capacity, the board announced in a statement. Summer Mummers serves as the annual fundraiser for the Midland Community Theater and has been a long-standing tradition in Midland since 1949. More than 100 volunteers come together each Friday and Saturday evening at the historic Yucca Theater in downtown Midland to raise money through performances with a nightly melodrama and oleo acts, popcorn and alcohol sales, and raffle drawings. In the summer of 2019, volunteers raised more than $740,000 to support the operations of Midland Community Theater, with 30 performances over 14 weeks. The group is currently pursuing other options in order to continue to fundraise this summer, and will have an announcement soon of possible events that may take place in July and August. Those who have already purchased tickets or made reservations will be contacted by the MCT box office this week. For more information, please call MCT at 432-570-4111. On the net, summermummers.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.